You're standing at the busiest ferry terminal in the United States, where nearly 5 million passengers a year cross the water between Bainbridge Island and Seattle. The trip takes 35 minutes, but the story of this place, of why people have been crossing this harbor for thousands of years, that takes a bit longer to tell. The Suquamish people knew this harbor long before it had an English name. The Suktobsh Band of the Suquamish had encampments at Wing Point, Bill Point, and near where this ferry dock stands today. They called the harbor the home of the eagles. For them, these waters were not an obstacle, but a highway, their cedar canoes connecting villages throughout Puget Sound in a network of trade, family, and ceremony that had thrived for thousands of years. European settlers arrived in the 1870s. James Ryan's family claimed land near this very dock in 1877. A year later, Riley and Martha Hoskinson settled just west of the creek and became the founders of a small community they called Madrone. By 1881, a man named Ambrose Groh had joined them after reading one of Hoskinson's newspaper articles about the beauty of the Northwest. A modest boat dock with a grocery store served passengers traveling to Seattle and the scattered communities around the Sound. Then came the mosquito fleet. Starting in the 1880s, a swarm of small private steamships began crisscrossing Puget Sound, stopping at nearly every waterfront dock. At their peak, at least 350 vessels buzzed across these waters, so many small boats that people said they looked like mosquitoes, and the name stuck. In 1887, a steamer called the Tolo began regular service between Eagle Harbor and Seattle, operated by Charles Williams, James Ryan's nephew. The Eagle followed in 1901, then the Florence K, and in 1915, a new steamer simply named the Bainbridge. As locals used to say, it was easier to go to Seattle on the steamer than to get to Port Blakely by horse and buggy. The mosquito fleet era created something remarkable, a web of maritime connections that made Puget Sound feel less like an expanse of open water and more like a neighborhood connected by floating streets. But the automobile changed everything. Through the 1920s and 1930s, highways and cars steadily replaced the little steamers. A company called the Puget Sound Navigation Company, operating under the old Black Ball Line name, began converting the fleet from passenger steamships to automobile ferries. Their president, Captain Alexander Peabody, was a Cornell-educated shipping heir whose great-grandfather had run the original Black Ball Line between New York and Liverpool a century earlier. Peabody was ambitious. By the late 1930s, he had achieved a near monopoly on Puget Sound ferry service, 23 vessels running 15 routes. His crown jewel was the Kalakala, a futuristic Art Deco ferry launched in 1935 that became one of the most photographed vessels on Earth, its streamlined silver hull looking like something from a science fiction movie gliding across the water. During World War II, with the Bremerton Naval Shipyard working around the clock, Peabody voluntarily lowered fares and increased service to 452 daily sailings. But after the war, costs soared and he demanded a 30% fare increase. When the state refused, Peabody did something extraordinary. On February 29, 1948, he shut down the entire fleet. For 9 days, tens of thousands of commuters were stranded. The U.S. Navy sent landing craft. Private boats scrambled to fill the gap. On Vashon Island, someone hung Peabody in effigy at the ferry terminal. The shutdown sealed his fate. Public opinion turned decisively against private ferry ownership. In 1949, the state legislature authorized a public ferry system. Peabody sold 16 vessels, his docks, and his routes for $5 million. At 3 in the morning on June 1, 1951, the ferry Enetai made the final Black Ball run. The company flag was lowered for the last time, and Washington State Ferries was born, today the largest ferry system in the United States. But this terminal witnessed something far darker than a labor dispute. By the early 1900s, Japanese immigrants had built a thriving community on Bainbridge Island. They cultivated strawberry farms that became legendary throughout the region. Their children were born here, went to school here, were Americans. Then came the morning of March 30, 1942, just 6 days after Civilian Exclusion Order No. 1 was posted, the very first such order issued anywhere on the West Coast. 227 Japanese Americans were forced from their homes. Military trucks went house to house. Families were told to bring only what they could carry. Armed soldiers with rifles and bayonets escorted them to the Eagledale Ferry Dock on the south shore of Eagle Harbor. At 11:20 in the morning, they boarded the ferry Kailokan. A photographer captured Fumiko Hayashida clutching her 13-month-old daughter, Natalie, an image that became one of the most recognized photographs of the Japanese-American internment. The local newspaper, the Bainbridge Review, reported that onlookers and even some soldiers wept openly as the ferry pulled away. They were sent first to Manzanar in California's Owens Valley, then some to Minidoka in Idaho. When the war ended, only 150 returned. The farms they had spent decades building were gone. Walt and Millie Woodward, publishers of the Bainbridge Review, were among the few newspaper editors in the country who spoke out against the internment. They continued publishing letters from the camps and advocated for their neighbors' return. Today, a memorial at the Eagledale Dock site, part of the National Park Service's Minidoka National Historic Site, bears all 276 names and the Japanese inscription, Nidoto Nayoni, let it not happen again. Stand here today and you'll see a Jumbo Mark II class ferry pulling in, 460 feet long, carrying 2,500 passengers and 200 cars. Every 35 minutes, one of these vessels connects island and city, carrying commuters who read and work and watch the water during what many of them call their favorite part of the day. The forced pause between the energy of Seattle and the quiet of island life. This terminal is more than infrastructure. It's the place where the Suquamish launched their canoes, where Mosquito Fleet steamers buzzed with passengers, where a shipping magnate's stubbornness created a public ferry system, and where 227 Americans were taken from their homes. Every crossing carries all of that history across the water.